From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, Reincarnation with Carol Bowman and an incredible story of a little boy who many believe now might be a reincarnated World War II pilot. He has answered all the questions, and he's been right on all of them. While as taxpayers continue to rush to file tax returns, independent auditors are warning that the Internal Revenue Service has not done enough to safeguard some of its computer systems, leaving sensitive taxpayer information vulnerable to disgruntled IRS employees, contractors, or even hackers. Unscrupulous people could reconfigure computer routers and switches and steal your information in a number of ways, including diverting information to unauthorized systems, according to the Treasury Inspector General for Tax Administration, which serves as a watchdog function over the IRS. The IRS says it's addressing the concerns raised in the report. The Internet could soon be made obsolete. That's right. The scientists who pioneered it have now built a lightning-fast replacement capable of downloading entire feature films within seconds at speeds up to 10,000 times faster than a typical broadband connection. The grid will be able to send, for example, the entire Rolling Stones back catalog from Britain to Japan in less than 2 seconds. The latest spinoff from CERN, we know about that, the particle physics center that created the web, the grid, could also provide the kind of power needed to transmit holographic images, allow instant online gaming with hundreds of thousands of players at the same time, and offer high-definition video for the price of a local phone call. It's amazing. Three people protesting China's human rights record and the impending arrival of the Olympic torch climbed up on the Golden Gate Bridge in San Francisco and tied the Tibetan flag and two banners to its cables. The banners read, "One World, One Dream, Free Tibet," and "Free Tibet." The protesters wore helmets and harnesses as they made their way up the cables running next to the South Tower of the famed span. The climb had the group suspended several dozen feet above traffic. In a moment, Charles R. Smith will join us as we talk about this issue. Israel, by the way, says it will destroy Iran if Tehran decided to launch a war against the Jewish state. The unusually harsh warning came from the Israeli infrastructure minister. He delivered this at the official ministry's war room, which took part today in a massive nationwide week-long drill that is set to include simulated chemical missile attacks on central Israel. Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad is urging OPEC members now to form a joint bank and stop pricing oil trades in U.S. dollars. According to the Iranian government's website, Ahmadinejad told OPEC's Secretary General that the cartel should establish a joint bank as well as having joint currency. Oil is priced in U.S. dollars on the world market, and the currency's depreciation has concerned producers because it has contributed to rising crude prices and eroded the value of their dollar reserves. The inquest into the death of Princess Diana in a Paris car crash in 1997 returned a verdict of unlawful killing, blaming grossly negligent driving by her chauffeur and pursuing photographers for the wreck. The coroner holding the inquest into the deaths of Diana and her boyfriend Dodi Fayed had earlier told the 11 jurors that he would accept a verdict if 9 of them agreed. The jury had been deliberating since Wednesday of April 2nd. Medicine mix-ups, accidental overdoses, and bad drug reactions harm roughly 1 out of 15 hospitalized children, according to the first scientific test of a new detection method. The number is far higher than earlier estimates and bolsters concerns already heightened by well-publicized cases such as the accidental drug overdose of actor Dennis Quaid's newborn twins last November. Alligators, of course, may have a reputation of being vicious predators, but the blood that runs through their veins could someday save your life. A study done by researchers in Louisiana suggests that proteins found in alligator blood may provide new antibiotics that could treat, for example, diabetic ulcers, severe burns, and superbugs, including MRSA, that are resistant to other kinds of medicine. A court has ruled in Germany that a German woman convicted of killing 8 of her infants must serve the maximum 15 years in prison. That's it. 41-year-old was convicted in 2006 of killing 8 of her newborn babies burying them in flower pots and a fish tank in the garden of her parents' home. A man who received a heart transplant 12 years ago and later married the donor's widow died the same way the donor did, according to authorities, of a self-inflicted gunshot wound. No foul play suspected in the 69-year-old Sonny Graham's death in Georgia. He was found in a utility building in his backyard with a single gunshot wound to the throat. He had earlier married the wife of the donor. And now we have this situation. So later on in this program, we're going to talk with Dr. Roland McCready about recipients who receive organs from donors who sometimes take on that personality. Sad story to report tonight. Coast to Coast guest Paul Pearsall is dead. Last summer, he went in for some tests, and while at the hospital, he died of a massive hemorrhage. Paul Pearsall has been a great man, and he deals with really some of the most incredible stories you can find. Let's listen in very briefly.
They see something that they're proud of. That's a very different way of looking at life.
We may use a clip or two of Paul Pearsall later on this week as we remember him. And as you know, last week, Coast to Coast guest Rupert Sheldrake was wounded when he was stabbed in the leg at a conference in Santa Fe, New Mexico, by a crazed person who just came into the conference center. Good news for Bob Dylan has been awarded a special music citation, winning the Pulitzer Prize. Dylan's citation noted his profound impact on popular music and the American culture. Congratulations, Mr. Dylan. Astronomers have discovered a planetary system orbiting a distant star, which looks much like our own. They found two planets that were close matches for Jupiter and Saturn, orbiting a star about half the size of our sun. It is 5 to 6 light years away, and this is 5,000 light years away. That was way too close. The newfound planetary system orbits the star Ogle 2006. And a Bosnian man whose home has been hit by an incredible 5 times by meteorites now believes he's being targeted by aliens. Experts at Belgrade University have confirmed that all the rocks that he has handed over to them were meteorites. They're now investigating local magnetic fields to try and work out what makes his property so attractive to the heavenly bodies. He says, "Look, I'm obviously being targeted by extraterrestrials. I don't know what I've done to annoy them, but there's no other explanation that makes sense. The chance of being hit by a meteorite is so small that getting hit 5 times has to be deliberate." He may be right. In a moment, we're going to talk with Charles R. Smith about the situation in China. That's next on Coast to Coast AM. Cyber war columnist Charles R. Smith, one of America's leading experts on cyber technology and implications for war, terrorism, privacy. He is an expert on China, and we thought we'd bring Charles in for just a few minutes to talk about this situation, these Olympic torch protesters here. Hey, Charles, welcome back, my friend. How are you?
Thank you for having me on board. I appreciate it.
What is your take with regards to these protests? There's no question China wants to have in a very exciting Olympic, but I don't think they were counting on this.
Well, actually, I suspect that they were counting on this. They have worked out agreements with various Western law enforcement and military entities to acquire an extensive array of intelligence information as well as equipment, even from the United States, in an effort to provide security for their Olympics. Obviously, the problem that we've run into, not only in Paris and London, and I suspect we're also going to see in San Francisco, will spread itself inside to Beijing proper, and we're probably going to see some pretty heavy-duty crackdowns by the People's Armed Police.
Do you believe the Olympics will go on?
Yes, I do. The Chinese are definitely determined to have the Olympics, even if there are major terrorist incidents, and it's not unlikely that the Uyghur separatists, Muslim terrorists, Taiwanese and Tibetan organizations will attempt to disrupt the games as best they can.
Charles, what does this tell you about the world's feeling generally toward China. I mean, here we are in Paris. Organizers cancel the final leg of the Olympic run after chaotic protests there. This is happening all over the place. What does that tell you about how the world's population generally feels about China?
Well, I think what we're running into here is a sort of a conflict between two separate groups. Here in the West, we have a very large group of multinationals and mega corporations that very much want to continue dealing with China because it's extremely profitable, and you will see a number of those companies involved in this. On the other hand, you're also going to see a number of activists and freedom groups, who, in some cases groups of individuals and nationalities who have been under the boot of China for a number of years, come to the forefront. So what we're looking at is sort of a is a clash of cultures here as we watch the Chinese grow out of the agrarian communist society that they formerly were and into, I suspect the best classification is a fascist society that we witness today.
If violence truly breaks out in this situation with regards to the Olympics, I mean, this could be embarrassing, especially if China cracks down hard on them.
Well, keep in mind that the Chinese are definitely going to be controlling the media with this as best they can. As we have seen with these incidents that have taken place, the Chinese people are virtually clueless as to exactly what is happening. What they have been shown, of course, has been the short array of angry businessmen and some athletes who stand to lose a lot of money in this prospect. Vested interests speak very loud. Of course, the other half of this is the reason why the Tibetans are protesting. Again, vested interests. When you have videotapes of Tibetan nuns being shot in the back by Chinese border guards, and then the border guards are paraded as heroes in Beijing, expect to have some reaction.
I feel sorry for the people carrying the torch because they could get really hurt.
Oh, there's no doubt about that. I mean, we've already seen some very near close calls in both the opening ceremonies in Greece as well as the most recent ceremonies in Paris. It would be extremely embarrassing, of course, if something happens here in the United States during the short stop in San Francisco, which is one of the reasons why both the FBI and SFPD and a number of other entities are on top alert in a attempt to, say, disrupt any of this activity. You know, once again, you reap and ye shall sow the wind. Keep in mind, in China, if you join a political party other than the Communist Party, that's treason, and you can essentially be executed for that, and they have carried out those kind of executions in the past 12 months.
China seems to be a hugely capitalistic society, yet they're very communist. Why the difference here? Why don't they try to become somewhat democratic? They seem to be in terms of its economy. Is it because they're greedy? The few people at the top, as you and I have talked about over the years, Charles, they don't want to relinquish the money and the power?
I think that's precisely what we're running into. It's no longer this kind of Maoist communist society, a commune of equals. They refer to it in some cases as a Marxist capitalist society, which of course is a dichotomy that simply doesn't exist. I think what you've actually seen is a degeneration of the Chinese government into a literally a fascist state where ownership is encouraged, billionaires walk the streets, and at the same time you have workers who are paid pennies a day at best and being exploited in massive numbers. We are witnessing essentially a police state in operation, which is why many of the protesters believe that this is a reincarnation of the 1936 Olympics.
Tell me a little bit about Tibet, Charles. Why won't China kind of release its purse strings on Tibet?
Tibet, the roof of the world, so to speak, controls a large portion of the Chinese water supply. There is also a huge, in essence, backing of natural resources that are within the borders of Tibet. So just from the point of view of mining resources, of water resources, of just pure and outright natural resources to be exploited by the growing Chinese economy, relinquishing Tibet would be almost like cutting off their arm. It is an area that they must exploit in order to remain at the forefront of their development with the 9 to 11% growth. So there is no doubt that they are going to overrun the Tibetan society and, in essence, exploit them to the max. Keep in mind, in the last 14 months, one of the major decrees to come out of Beijing was that you cannot have a reincarnation unless it is first approved by the Communist Party. To us Westerners, that, of course, sounds kind of ridiculous.
Right.
But the reality is, of course, in a religious society based on a reincarnation of deities being the religious leadership, it makes perfect sense in order to retain control of the leadership and of the Tibetan people. In other words, you cannot be a Dalai Lama or a leading priest unless you have the thumbs up from Beijing first.
When does China make its move into Taiwan?
The Chinese currently have some 1,400 missiles deployed at Taiwan. We predicted by 2006 to 2008 that we'd see about 1,000. I predicted that back in 1998. The military sources that I was dealing with were basing this on the number of revetments essentially being made available for the number of missiles. You don't build facilities unless you have intention of filling those holes, so to speak. And in this case, if you're building revetments and expensive bunker systems, you really don't spend that kind of money there unless you had intention of putting the hardware in place. China still can't step off on Taiwan because they do not have the naval power. That is coming. So look for their Blue Water Fleet to be deployed within the next decade. The problem that I see is that China may very well feel they need to preempt Taiwan. Taiwan is making, obviously, some big moves in an attempt to become an independent state. In other words, accept the de facto. And we may very well see missile launches, say an embargo or a naval blockade to be undertaken that could very well lead to both combat with the U.S. as well as with Japanese and Taiwanese forces. So it's a very dangerous situation all in all.
Still writing for Newsmax.com?
Absolutely.
Very good. And your website, Charles?
Softwar, that's softwar.net.
Charles, if anything breaks on this Olympic protest situation, we'll call you back and get you on, okay?
I'll be available.
That's Charles R. Smith, expert on China. Just a very strange situation. What a planet we live in, my friends. But we're going to continue to monitor all these situations for you every day. If you need to email me, that's george@coasttocoastam.com. Just fire away that way. And in a moment, we're going to bring in Dr. Roland McCready. We're going to talk about a heart transplant patient who killed himself the same way as the donor of the heart did. Cellular memory. Is that what happens? We'll find out. on Coast to Coast AM. We're going to take your calls right after the break with our special guest, Dr. Roland McCready, this hour, as it directly relates to the possibility of cellular memory. Here's the story we've been talking about. A man who received a heart transplant 12 years ago and later married the donor's widow died the same way the donor did, according to authorities, of a self-inflicted gunshot wound. Very strange story. Dr. Roland McCready back with us after almost a year, Roland, I think, hasn't it?
I think it has been, George.
Nice it's good to have you on. Yeah, we have to have you on for a full show. But this story is strange, and I wanted to get your take, first of all, on heart transplants. I've got to tell you a story. Several years ago, my daughter had a cadaver bone put in her neck, a disc, okay? And she started having these bizarre memories. I mean, absolutely bizarre. She is convinced, that she was picking up some of the memory of the person who donated that bone. Is this possible?
Well, I think it's more than possible. The amount of cases, confirmed cases of these type of transplanted memories are actually overwhelming if one is really looks at the evidence. It's certainly a lot stronger effect and more pronounced and more common with the heart than it is any other organ. But there have actually been reports of this for many, many, many years throughout history, actually.
Now, tell me a little bit about the possibility, then, of cellular memory. I mean, it's something that I don't think has been researched, has it?
Well, in some ways it has. It's not a standard concept in mainstream science. But let's start with, if I can, the heart to kind of give a context here.
Sure.
Because all memory is cellular in a way. I mean, a neuron is a cell. And what a lot of people don't realize within the heart is a very complex nervous system. And not that many years ago, it actually branched a whole new field, which is a fully functional, legitimate subspecialty in medicine now, called neurocardiology, the study of the nervous system within the heart. And actually, in the very early 90s, that group came out and officially said, we now have to think of the heart as having an intrinsic brain, the brain and the heart. Now, what's really interesting, and a lot of people don't realize, and what I'm about to tell you has been known since the late 1800s, and that is that the heart actually sends more information to the brain than the brain sends to the heart. And just like if we have a perception at the level of the brain, we get scared or angry or something, that causes the heart rate to change and these types of things. But the information that the heart sends to the brain profoundly affects our perceptions and brain function. Now, so these neurons in the heart, it's a very complex system. We now know it's distributed throughout the heart itself, which is this interconnected system. Now, some of the neurons in the heart were literally named after neurons that are found up in our brain in a specific region called the hippocampus, which are well established to be involved in long-term memory. And these same neurons are in the heart. They were literally named after these neurons, and using the same type of recording techniques that are used to discriminate to show memory in the neurons in our brain upstairs, those same techniques have been shown to clearly show that the neurons in the heart have both short and long-term memory. Now, memory has been known for many years, and this is confirmed in all the modern studies, is what's called a distributed process. In other words, you cannot locate memory to a neuron or a group of neurons.
Right.
Certainly, you have to have certain groups of neurons to encode and decode those neurons, but that's not where the memory lies at. It's distributed. So I don't know where we got this idea that we have to draw a line through the neck and say it's only distributed from there up. Why can't it be distributed throughout the entire nervous system, especially when we know we've got the neurons in the heart that have memory? I mean, they're scientifically proven to be memory cells.
So you know,
go ahead.
Well, so many people have always said that the heart, for example, has emotion. You know the old saying, you know, I love you from my heart and everything
sure.
else. But now I believe it. I believe the heart has cellular memory. I believe there's almost every portion of our body that memory might be stored in, not just the brain.
Well, absolutely. Especially where we have the neural structures that we know it's stored in. And I mean, it's another level of memory, I think, less impactful in other types of cells than these neural cells. But ultimately, memory is probably more, is what I believe, more of an energetic level phenomena anyway, which is what all the stuff about the brain neurons tells us. Why it's distributed, that's really the only way we can explain that. And you're mentioning the heart. I mean, it's been known in all cultures since recorded history, the heart has been considered the main access point to higher wisdom, or what a lot of people call the higher self or spirit part of ourself. And the some of the experiments we've been doing in our research facility are really bringing very strong evidence to in fact, that's true. Some studies that we've done that are very much related to your topic tonight involve intuition. And what we've confirmed and shown through very rigorous methods is that the heart actually responds before the brain and informs the brain about a future event, a lot of what we call intuition. And I was able to get that published in scientific journals by saying, well, it looks like the heart has access to a field of information not bound by time and space. But that's just a scientific way of saying higher self or spirit. So in the case of a heart transplant, I see no reason why that heart still couldn't have part of it tuned in to the donor of the heart. And in fact, I've had conversations with some people that have had transplants that say it's like there's two people living inside of them, quite literally. And this effect usually fades for most people, but there are quite a few cases now where it doesn't.
I mean, it even gets even stranger, where this recipient ends up marrying the wife of the donor, and again, the self-inflicted gunshot wound 12 years later. Is it possible, regardless of memory of cells, is it possible that whatever drove the first individual to kill himself, that was still in the memory of the cells, and somehow it got to this other individual, who apparently showed no signs of wanting to kill himself?
Sure. I mean, I think it's possible, but I think a more, at least from my through my eyes, a more reasonable perspective would be that the cells in the heart, I mean, let's think of the heart as it really is. We really do have an energetic or electronic system that really runs the show of the body. That's really a level past brain and nervous system in these things. The evidence for that is now overwhelming. And the heart is the central player in that system. So it's the most connected to higher self, spirit, whatever you want to call it. So I think it's more to do with that, in other words, the donor heart, or the person that got the recipient heart, a part of that is still tuned into the consciousness of the donor, rather than it just being a cellular memory effect. I think there's an ongoing thing, and I say that because some of the interviews I've had with people feel like they're living with two people on an ongoing basis, can actually have conversations with, if you will, the consciousness of the donor. There's one case of this that really, I think, takes it past cellular memory and a lot of more to the type of things I'm talking about. And this is a verified story of a young adolescent girl who had a congenital heart defect and had to have a transplant. As it turned out, she got her new heart from another adolescent girl, only this girl had been murdered.
Oh, my.
And the police had no idea, no leads, had gone dead. But what happened, the donor, the recipient of the donor heart, started in her quieter times getting images of what the young lady that she'd gotten her heart from looked like, the clothes she liked, the food she liked, and on and on and on. And as a little bit of time progressed, she actually was able to get enough details about the event, the murder, that she was able to provide police with enough clues that they were able to open the case and get a conviction.
Those are things, Roland, that movies are made of.
Absolutely. And this is, like I say, this is a verified case. This really, really happened. So in these kind of cases, I don't think we can just explain it to some type of latent cellular memory.
All right. Well, we'll be back in just a moment with Dr. Roland McCready. We'll take your phone calls. What an incredible story. I'm George Norrie. This is Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie with Dr. Roland McCready, and we're talking about cellular memory. You've heard the story. We're talking about Wild Card Line. Ryan in Canada, you're on the air with us. Hi, Ryan.
Hi, George. Hi, Roland.
Hi, Ryan.
Hi. I'm just calling to, first of all, I wanted to say Sita is a Pali word for heart and mind. They view it as a singular entity. They both think. I've heard the same thing as ourselves and the heart also that think for us, as well as other parts of our body. And they're virtually seen as one. And actually, from other esoteric studies that I have done, that those things have to be taken into account if you really want to have something spiritually higher. But as far as the what was happening with the two people committing suicide, I think there might be another aspect to it that maybe not kind of related to what you're talking about, because perhaps the memories of the first deceased husband was mixed with the subsequent experiences with this lady, which led them to suicide. In other words, there's never just one reason for any actions or motives for humans to do the things that they do, but maybe the widow's, well, twice a widow now, had been a difficult person to live with. Like, I don't know her, but you know, speaking with psychologists, social workers, reading the news, other personal experiences, as well as my own, women seem to be becoming more violent and abusive, and with the social stigmas that play.
Well, yeah, but Ryan, we can't say that about her.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying it's possible that that's what's happening. That's not, like I said, I don't know her. I don't know that's what could be going on, but what I'm saying is the experiences of the previous heart owner, and it's a possibility is what I'm saying.
Do you think it could be a possibility, Doctor?
Well, who knows? It could have played a role. I would certainly not want to go there. I think most reasonable people in a bad relationship find ways to get out of it rather than committing suicide.
Without, yeah, exactly.
So, I mean, who knows what's really going on all the different levels that could be playing here. But I do think it's another example that we have to pay attention to, that we have to think a little wider about what the human system really is and how it works. The first part of what Ryan said also fits very well with a lot of our research. And it's why we call it heart intelligence, because through our heart we can access new creativity and intuition and ways to solve day-to-day problems. And this is very clear now, in fact, that it's the rhythms of the heart that really set the rhythm for the entire body, including memory access, even at the level of the brain. The heart has a lot to do with the memories we can even access from the neurons in our head. And we actually have simple devices now that people can use to monitor their heart rhythms and train themselves to shift into what we call a more coherent state. And several studies have now proven, with beyond a shadow of a doubt, highly significant improvements in people's memory, for example, to be able to access their own past memories. So the heart has a lot more to do with this than people have understood. A lot of the esoteric and spiritual literatures have known more about this for a lot longer. But again, that's why we call it heart intelligence and are teaching people how to actually access this through some simple little technologies that you can get. But by the way, George, one of the things we found that interests a lot of people when I was talking about the heart-brain, we actually have photographs of it now of different levels of magnification.
Mm-hmm.
If anybody's interested and wants to actually see what the heart-brain looks like, these groups of neurons that actually look like little brains, they can go to our website and actually see these images, some really neat-looking images of what the brain and the heart looks like.
Heartmath.org, right?
Right, and then there's a little section there that says new images of the brain and the heart you can click on. And also, if people, we're doing a series of free webinars now on how people can learn to access their heart intelligence to control anxiety and then really transform it by accessing this intuition from the heart and how to solve day-to-day problems. So that's another opportunity. If people want to learn more about it, they can take one of these free webinars.
Great. West of the Rockies. Hi there, you're on the air with us.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Hi, George. Hi, Roland.
Hello.
I was curious, would this be along the same lines? Say you have, like, a person has perpetual sadness from, you know, constant losses throughout their life, and then, you know, without knowing it or keeping track of the days of when somebody died or whatever, and then you're sitting around and you're feeling blue, and then you realize, you know, gee, my mom died today, and then my dog of 24 years died, you know, within that same year, and my stepdad, and on and on and on. Would that be the same type of heart loss, the feeling that one would have.
Well, are you? Did this recently happen?
Oh yeah, this is all within 5 years. I lost quite a few family members, and it hasn't stopped. And my two dogs.
Uh huh.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
Well, that can be tough for anyone. Those kind of losses, absolutely. But ultimately, I've come to believe that deep or extended sadness that goes past, you know, the normal healthy grieving process really does involve being cut off from our own heart. And so, again, there are things that we can do to help ourselves through that process. And for a lot of people, it's actually accessing a deeper part of their own spirit or higher self that really comes in and really helps people through those kind of difficult periods. I don't know if I've really answered your question or not. It's kind of a tough one, but there certainly are things that you can do. I mean, it's not going to make all the bad things go away, but they can help you get through that, to find a rhythm through that. And if you would like, I could actually give you a phone number. You could call someone who could help maybe get you to one of the free programs or something I was talking about that might find very helpful.
You want to give it to her now, or you want to give it to her off air?
Well, we can do it both. It's 800-450-9111. And also, if you want to sign up for one of these free programs on how to deal with anxiety, depression, these types of things, that's heartmath.com. And there's a place right on their website that you can click that'll take you to all the details for it. And again, they're free. It's something we do as a public service to really help people access that deeper part of themselves and their heart intelligence.
East of the Rockies, you're up with Dr. Roland McCready. Hi there.
Hey, is this me?
Yes, sir.
Hey, Roland, George, pleasure to talk to you guys.
Thank you.
Yes.
First-time caller. Roland, I was curious, do you think there should be a grant for studies on cellular memory?
Yeah, I do, actually.
I do, too. There should be a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, it's an incredible topic, and, you know, it's worthy of major scientific research, Roland.
It absolutely is. I mean, all the pieces are there. It's a lot of this is just helping people get past their own boxes in terms of the way they think that the human system's wired and what all we're made up of. And it's just I'm just completely convinced that any intelligent scientist has to look at the data that's really before us. And the picture that's painted is that we're much more than just a physical being. There really is an energetic or a spiritual part of us, and that learning to align more with that is really the ultimate way to maintain our own good health and balance through life.
You know, I'm beginning to wonder if for some reason they get a heart from some murderer or some kidney from a murderer or something like that, if violence takes over the other person.
Well, that certainly hasn't been the case. Now, I actually know quite a few heart transplant surgeons, and I've been sworn to secrecy to not give out their names. But this thing we're talking about, these transplanted memories, is more common than they would like you to believe. And the reason they want to kind of keep it quiet is they don't want people to fear getting transplants.
Absolutely. Yeah. Hey, Roland, I want to thank you for being on the program.
You're most welcome.
All right, my friend, you take care of yourself. Very informative. Kind of scary, too. I'll be back in a moment. Carol Bowman joins us, reincarnation. And also we'll talk about an incredible story of a little boy who may be a reincarnated World War II pilot. I'm George Norrie. Coast to Coast AM continues.